You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 264 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return, knowing Wheel is back, and I've messed up the intro because I was going to call him Snotball183. How are we doing, sir?
As you might be able to tell, I'm not doing great this week, but we soldier on. I was thinking at one point this podcast would never happen and I'd have to send my regards and my predictions by pigeon or something, but... We made
I was going to have to do the podcast by myself.
Yeah, we're going to have to get a Nico Hülkenberg super sub in. But no, I would definitely be skipping media day, but I've made it for the main event. And here we are. But
that's
yes,
all right. That's all right.
In bed all week with the flu. It's not great.
Well, I'm going to go back through and read our DMs from a couple of days ago.
Oh, no.
So we agreed. So Jamie messaged me at Sunday, just saying 8 a.m, which is basically the only thing we message each other each week, just to confirm we're going live. Then he texts me on Tuesday going, I got super unwell overnight, not sure if I'll be able to record. So I said, oh no, hope you feel better soon. So he texts me back going, not going to be good for 8 a.m. So I just went back, which end is it coming out of? And you said, top.
Yeah, it wasn't a great one. I was pulling a Mark Webber
from
Fuji.
Please don't do that in the middle of the podcast, because I won't edit it.
No, it's not happened in a few days now, so we're all good.
Wonderful. Well, I'm sure everybody wanted to know this.
I will be sniffling and potentially coughing and sounding like I'm Sean Dyche quite a lot, who Matt won't know who that is.
I know who he is. He's the ginger guy, and he was a football manager, is a football manager.
He just got a new job as a football manager.
He saves people from relegation, doesn't he? That's like his whole thing.
He does.
He plays Brexit football. Am I right in saying that?
Exactly. You're bang on. There we go.
There you go. See, look at that. I know everything there is to know about football. I mean, Mexico, they're a country that likes football. They've done all right in a couple of World Cups. Actually, no, Mexico famously underperform in football, don't they? Because they should
they're
be
not
a
great,
lot...
but then we're not here to talk about Mexican football team, are we?
No,
but,
we're not.
Yeah, they love their sport all round, which is a great segue. And there you go. Knock yourself out with Formula One.
Wonderful, wonderful. Obviously, we've got a couple of bits to go through from COTA. Jamie, first of all, pardon my French, F1 shithousery is back, and Red Bull, of course, are the ones to instigate it.
Oh, I love Red Bull. This is why the game is the game. I absolutely, it's phenomenal. Just the lengths they go to win when there's a chance of a world championship. It's great, and the fact that they can just mess with other teams in quite a harmless way. Where it's not technically breaking the rules, but it's definitely not sportsmanlike.
Well, they definitely broke the rules, hence why they got a €50,000 fine.
No, but the attempt, like the actual action, wasn't the rule breaking.
Oh no,
the mess up of execution was. Yeah. But for those who haven't seen it, there's Lando Norris, as well as some other drivers, actually use tape to as a reference point to know where to stop on your grid box. So Lewis Hamilton does the same thing, but he has his tape inside his cockpit so he can line it up with a point of reference on the wall either side of the track, which seems to be a good idea because it means you're not going to overshoot your box, not going to get a penalty.
Ripple, if someone's reaching into his cockpit to get rid of the tape, it'll be a bit awkward.
Yeah. But Lando Norris...
karate chop. It's like something out of a Johnny English movie.
Yeah.
He's going around lap one with just a Red Bull mechanic hanging out the car.
Exactly. But Lando Norris and McLaren use a bit of tape outside the car. So he can line it up, I think it's something along his mirror or the aerodynamic kind of furniture.
On the front of the wheel, and you know, like they've got that bit that goes over the top of the wheel to hopefully stop the cars rolling off each other in tire-to-tire contact.
Yeah. So he's been using that for a long time. I think, fair to say, most, if not all the season, probably longer. So Red Bull thought they'd just mess with it. And it's not the first time that they've tried to mess with it. But this time, whoever's job it was to execute didn't do it right and therefore had to kind of re-enter the grid once you weren't allowed to anymore, which not only made it super obvious what they were trying to do, but also got them a 50k fine. Was it 50k or was it more than that?
50,000 euros, yes.
Yeah. So this time around it didn't work. The McLarens have kind of cottoned on to what they're doing, so made it very difficult to pull off this tape. And yeah, that meant that they couldn't mess with his tape. He didn't get a penalty for being overshooting his box. So sadly for Red Bull, it didn't work. But I wonder, can you remember any times where Norris has got a penalty for this kind of thing? I don't think it happened this season.
He jumped the start in Saudi Arabia, didn't he?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia he jumped it, but I don't think he was overshot his box.
No, I don't think he'd overshot his box, though. Yeah, it's been a weird one, isn't it? Because, of course, it's only really become a problem in the last few years, and I don't even think it's a Halo problem. It's just how big and bulky the cars are generally now, that you can't really see out of them anymore to kind of, you know, at that kind of a close level, to really see where kind of the wheels are.
Yeah, but the rest of the drivers manage, don't they? So,
well, they don't, though. As you said, a lot of them obviously do have different bits and pieces. I mean, I remember the reason why I think it's the little kind of bits that go over the top of the wheels is I remember when McLaren bought that Senna livery to Monaco. Was that this year? Yeah, I think that was this year, wasn't it?
No, it was last year.
Was it? I thought it was this year.
No, Leclerc won from Piastri, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm so old. Yeah, he did, didn't he? but obviously, yeah, they obviously had the yellow and green on the car, but they still kept those little bits over the wheel orange because both drivers were like, we're used to it. We need that reference point at Monaco to kind of know where the wheels are. So that's why I think that is what it is. But yeah, I mean, like we said, though, obviously Red Bull, you know, willing to kind of do anything. And I know we spoke about it before, but unlike, you know, a Mercedes, a Ferrari, probably a McLaren now as well, Red Bull are in a really odd position, aren't they, always? Because it makes sense for them to do stuff like that, because they're always known as kind of being mavericks and kind of breaking the rules. And whereas if a Ferrari did that, it would be a huge scandal and their stock price would go down or something.
Or Mercedes. Or like Aston Martin, even. So, like, the fact that Red Bull, they've always been marketed separate from Formula One. Like, their whole brand is this maverick kind of shove it to the system kind of stuff, isn't it? With the X Games and all the extreme sports they do.
Even the Red Bull drink to begin with was banned in a lot of countries.
Exactly. And when they came into Formula One, they were the young upstart party team, weren't they? Like, yeah, they've always been mavericks. And I think that's why people kind of like them for that, because it is that attitude of win or bust, isn't it? Which I guess Max Verstappen takes on for himself as well. Which is why it's kind of such a perfect duo, I think.
Yeah, no, it is. It is one of those interesting things, isn't it? You briefly mentioned Aston Martin there, though, Jamie. They literally overnight. It's a good job we recorded this today rather than Wednesday, because I'm sure I can get some clickbait on the title and stuff. Aston Martin broke the cost cap, except for they previously agreed that they would with the FIA or something.
Yeah, well, they've overnight. So we're recording this Friday morning on Thursday in Mexico. So probably only a few hours ago, really. They've accepted signed an admitted breach agreement, which basically means they've said, yes, we breached a cost cap. Not many details are out about how or why or what the consequences will be yet, but it's not a great look. It will have been for 2024, obviously, and they were doing quite a lot of upgrades to the factory in 2024, and probably still are, to be honest. So I guess it's interesting, the cost cap, because one of the things that James Vowles, I remember saying about the cost cap a few years ago, was it doesn't differentiate between your operational expenditure and your capital expenditure. So stuff like factory upgrades, infrastructure, massive pieces of kit that you buy for the long term, you're kind of hamstrung in that if you want to, in the year, purchase that stuff, actually it's going to really hamper you, or you're just going to have to accept you're going to break it. So I wonder if that's what Aston Martin have done, in that they've kind of said, well, we're going to go for 2026. Let's break the cost cap now. We'll take the penalty in 25, and then 26, we're going to be okay.
Yeah, and it is kind of that, again, it's that weird thing, isn't it? And I know we spoke about the cost cap a few weeks ago, didn't we? Because some really interesting info kind of came out about the inner workings of like what it includes and what it doesn't. Because, of course, you know, apart from the... it doesn't involve your top three highest paid personnel and your drivers. A lot of it was kind of still shrouded in mystery. How do you spend $4 million on catering a year and things like that? But it, obviously we kind of got a few more hints and things like that. And obviously, as you said, with James Vowles as well. The cost cap is definitely working, I think, for the most part. I mean, I don't think, apart from very rogue seasons, have we ever really seen the entire grid as close as we do right now, which, of course, is fantastic. We don't have any true backmarkers. I'm sure next year there'll be a couple of teams that get it wrong off the bat. But, yeah, it is kind of... It's that whole thing. It's all the other random bits and pieces that you have to think about. Like, for example, obviously, Sauber having to pay higher wages for a long time. That's obviously now been factored in. You know, electricity cost can be different depending on where you are in the UK. You know, that obviously, you know, Formula One factories use a huge amount of electricity. All these kind of things that kind of you go, yeah, cost cap is great on paper, but it will naturally bias some teams more than others.
And it will cost the engineers real money at the end of the day, because teams now have to pay them less.
Penny scrimp, basically.
Yeah.
Penny pinch. And like, that was the word I was looking
for. In the past, where Ferrari or Mercedes can just, you know, double the salary of someone at Haas.
Yeah.
That's just not happening anymore because the wages of your employees are included in the cost cap. Yeah. So if you're riding the limit, you can't afford just to pay people what you want to pay them.
It's still my absolute favourite story of all time. And I think I've told this before on the podcast, but the Minardi chief designer, when Toyota wanted to hire him. Do you remember this one?
I think I do remember this one, but you can tell it again because it was a long time ago.
It was a very long time ago because this is obviously back in the early 2000s. This is when Toyota were coming into the sport. They basically obviously were like, right, we really want you to design our new cars. What, you know, we want to offer you. It was something like $2 million they offered him. Now, he was on like $1.5 million at Minardi, and he was kind of like, this is a big factory team. These are just numbers kind of plucked out of the air, but to kind of explain the story. I can't remember what the exact figures were. So he kind of looked at it and was like, $2 million, I don't want to get only a, you know, $500,000 pay rise from Toyota, you know, to work for a big factory team. There's going to be a lot of pressure on me. I've suddenly got a lot more staff, all this, that, and the other. So he managed to renegotiate it up to about $2.5-3 million. And it was only then when he went to Japan to sign the contracts, he found out that they were talking about per month, not per year. So he ended up accidentally negotiating himself like a $6 million bonus that was therefore effectively in of itself four times what Minardi were paying him for a year. So he ended up on about a 20 times pay rise, was something utterly insane.
Yeah, there's some brilliant stories about
exactly, how and much... that kind of thing just doesn't happen anymore. Which I'm sure for him is probably quite sad. But I'm sure
I was listening to Beyond the Grid. I really don't remember who it was with, but it was. Oh, it was Anthony Davidson actually.
He
was a test driver back in the early 2000s for Honda, and he was basically saying mid tire war when obviously Michelin and Bridgestone were going at it. These tire manufacturers, like, they wouldn't really change. The teams didn't bother with setup changes. They just asked the tyre manufacturers to slightly adjust.
Change the aspects of the tyres. Yeah.
So he would be doing like hundreds of laps a day in a test circuit. And they would bring about 50 different sets of tyres, all with such minor differences in about like the camber width, the pressures, the cambers themselves. Like all of these things would just be slight minute adjustments so that when they got to the racetracks, they knew exactly what tyres the main drivers would want. And that just looks ridiculous looking back on how... Because all
how
these tyres were used.
How much money was just thrown away.
And how bad for the environment it was, because you're just throwing rubber down the drain, basically. Because these probably wouldn't have been recycled back then. They'd just been binned.
Yep.
Or made into tyre barriers, potentially.
Yeah.
But probably not. And yeah, just the money that was flying around. Like, the engine cap used... Like, do you remember in 07, 08 when... teams had to start using engines for two races in a row.
That was 2005, wasn't it, I think? No, 2005, I believe, was the first year you had to make an engine last two weekends. Yeah, and teams were going, well, this is ridiculous. So how are we meant to do two Grand Prix on an engine? That's impossible.
Yeah, in 09, it was eight engines across the course of the season. And it was obviously way simpler engines back then. But yeah, people used to sit out of practice sessions because they were getting close to their engine limit.
Or you deliberately clutch an engine if you were out of the points towards the end of a Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Or have an engine issue so you could change it for free the next weekend. Utterly insane. And then the financial crash happened and all things changed with Formula One. It's never been the same.
And lots of teams went bust and pulled out.
Exactly. Should we actually talk about Mexico, Jamie? Because we've been recording now for 15 minutes and we haven't actually really spoke about Mexico.
Yeah, let's do it.
Nine rookies in FP1. I feel like this pretty much happened last year. Let me just get the list up. Because I believe it's only McLaren. So obviously nine rookies. So I always forget they've got two cars, don't they? So Hasso Award is in McLaren for Lando Norris. Fred Vesti is replacing George Russell. I don't know why he's still sticking around, but then again, Pato Award probably isn't getting an F1 drive anytime soon. My favourite one is Ferrari, Antonio Fuoco. He's 29 years old. He's older than Leclerc, but he's replacing Hamilton for FP1. Arvid Lindblad in the Red Bull. That one makes sense. Luke Browning down at Williams. Again, that one kind of makes sense, although he's named 23. Jack Crawford over at Aston Martin. Ryo Hirakawa, obviously down at Haas. Of course, we know he's willing to pay big money for an FP1 test. Ayumu Iwasa down at Racing Bulls. Paul Aaron at Alpine. So it does just mean Sauber are the only one that are going to have both drivers in the car all weekend.
Yes, which is good news for Sauber, because they'll obviously get more relevant information, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting. Because obviously there's this rule where you've got to run rookies in four FP1 sessions.
Yeah.
But anyone who debuted a rookie this year, that just counts as two straight away, because the
apart from Ollie Bearman.
Yeah, the
and
definition
Liam
of rookie is two or fewer races, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Ollie Bearman obviously had three. Liam Lawson had about 11 before last year, didn't he?
Yeah.
Before this year. But all the pure rookies, so your Antelli's, Bortoletto,
Hadjar,
even Alpine with Doohan and Colapinto, they all kind of ticked the box before the season really started. But it's interesting looking at the races.
I guess Colapinto wouldn't have counted either, would he?
Oh no, he wouldn't have, of course.
And obviously Jack Doohan did one race last year as well, so Alpine, despite putting two rookies in the car, only managed to get one FP1 ticked off.
Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting seeing the races they always put them in for, because it's typically the races where the drivers know the track very well, or it's quite a simple track. Is that harsh?
I would say a short track is fairer, because obviously it then means when you go out in FP2, you can get more laps in.
Yeah.
Which I guess in turn, therefore, a shorter track arguably would make it more simple, in theory. I mean, I wouldn't put a rookie in Jeddah, for example. I think that'd be quite a risk.
Or Vegas. Or Monaco. Like, you're not going to do that.
No.
So, it's
and
always
some of them
the likes
do, though. I can't remember who it was. It was one this year, wasn't it? I think someone
in
had
Monaco.
I feel like someone already started in FP2. I could be wrong, but I just feel
surely
like I remember
not.
Something like that.
I'm going to look it up. You carry on talking.
No, but either way, I mean, I always wonder if there's a bit of a gentleman's agreement by a lot of the teams that they go, oh, just everyone be on the back foot. You know, no one actually cares about Mexico. It's all high altitude. You can't do anything anyway. Well, let all the rookies go out there and have a bit of fun. Trash some cars, that kind of thing. You know, obviously, you're certainly not going to do it. You're kind of limited by where you can do it now, because you want to do it towards, I guess Mexico's one of the only tracks towards the end of the year you want to do it. Mexico and Abu Dhabi are arguably in the fight, I would say, after Monza, they're probably the only two tracks you want to do it, because Baku is brutal, Singapore is quite tough, Kota's a sprint, Mexico obviously is alright, Brazil is a sprint, Vegas is horrible, Qatar's a sprint, and then obviously Abu Dhabi. So you're kind of damned wherever you do it in the second half of the year, pretty much. You're better off just lobbing them in for, like, I'd say Austria, Silverstone, Hungary, and
Monza
or Zandvoort, yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair, that's what a lot of teams did. I quite like the idea of rookies getting runouts in FP1, but you know, it is quite amusing. Was it this race last year where there were like the time, maybe it was Abu Dhabi last year, where the timing tower was just like foreign.
Oh yeah.
And I had no idea who anyone was, but yeah, I mean, they're not realistically, they're all good drivers. They're not going to end up crashing.
Oh, you say that now. I mean, I'm just having a look back through, Jamie. I think what? So Arvid Lindblad, Luke Browning, Crawford, out of the nine, only four of them are currently... Oh, no, because only three of them are racing in F2 this year. That's kind of insane.
That is a little bit insane, because, yeah, that's always quite an easy... I guess you would do it on an F2 weekend, wouldn't you? So...
No, you probably wouldn't, though, would you?
Alex
you
Dunn did it at Monza in Austria. He was racing the McLaren, wasn't he?
Yeah, I suppose. But he's obviously not even a McLaren
Junior. Onto the quiz quite nicely.
Oh, does it?
Because
good lord.
You're going to have as much time as you want for this.
Oh, no.
In my head, I thought Mexico 2024 had a similar rate of rookies racing in Formula One practice session. But it was only actually 5 last year. So you've got to name all 5 of them. And you've got as long as you want.
I've got to try and name 5 rookies in an FP1 test a year ago. Are you high? What kind of a question is that?
Shall I give you the teams? That might make it a bit easier.
That might help a little bit, so but probably not a huge
you've
amount.
You've got Mercedes.
I'm going to assume, therefore, it was Fred Vesti, because he's about the only junior they've got, unless it was Paul Aaron.
Is that your final answer?
I don't know. This is such a... this in 264 episodes, is the worst quiz you've ever done.
I'm not sure it is. There's been some bad ones.
I'm going to have to gamble on it. Fred Vesti was sitting F2 last year. Was he? No, was he? No, I don't think he was anymore, was he? I think he was already gone. I'm going to say Paul Aaron.
That was incorrect.
Ah, poo. Who are the other teams?
Yeah, but the Mercedes one...
Antonelli? Oh, of course, yeah.
McLaren.
Bortoletto.
Think about where the race is happening.
Passwell Ward.
There you go. Aston Martin.
Crawford?
Incorrect. Felipe Drogovic.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Sauber.
Sauber Jr. I was going to say Tim Tramnitz, but that's just because he moved to Sauber in my F1 career mode and he's due.
Brilliant.
I'm gonna say Bortoletto.
Incorrect. It was Robert Schwartzman.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because people got really angry about it.
Ferrari.
Oh, was it Fuoco? No, Giovinazzi. No, Fuoco.
2024 rookie, and you've gone for Giovinazzi.
Hey, they put a 29-year-old in there this year.
Yeah, but Giovinazzi did 3 seasons in Formula 1.
Yeah, I know. My favourite one was I saw someone on Twitter go, why have they given Fuoco the seat when Meyer Werg is in Formula Academy? You're there going, it's Formula 4. Fuoco just won Le Mans. I'm all for Formula Academy, and it's generally actually a really exciting season
really good
this year. But you don't put an F4 driver straight in an F1 seat.
No. Who would have debuted... I mean, technically, they actually weren't a rookie, I've just realised. But who would have been driving FP1 for Ferrari last year?
Behrman?
There you go. You got 1 out of 5.
Yeah! Oh, man. Terrible quiz. Absolutely terrible quiz.
I'll not invent quizzes when I'm high on drugs next
time. Yes, please don't. Please don't. That's getting clipped. If ever there was a clip for this podcast. Jamie won't Brilliant. Do quizzes when he's high.
You can blame Vera Fenn for that.
Exactly. Well, he's on the hardcore stuff. JB183, I've got a question for you, sir. The 2025 Formula One world champion will be...
Max Verstappen. Why?
Oh, he's...
Why not?
Man.
I said on last week before COTA, I said if it's down around 50 points after COTA, I'll start believing.
Yep.
And he absolutely smashed it, and it's down to 40.
Yep.
So I kind of have to.
I mean, if you're a McLaren at this point, what you do, one of you takes out Max this weekend, the other one of you takes out Max next weekend, you bag 25 points each. Even Lando then suddenly has got a 51-point buffer again with 2 races less to go. Surely that's the game plan.
Realistically, for me, Max has to win 4 out of 5 GPs.
Sensibly needs to win all 5, really.
Yeah. But unless the odd one is one, I think he can afford Norris to win one.
Yeah, if he can split them and Norris wins one. Yeah.
But like if the order is Verstappen, Norris, Piastri 5 times, Verstappen wins the championship.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And like given how far back he was at one point, like not even that long ago, he was 104 points back before Monza, which was at the start of September.
Yep.
And it's now like, you know, less than 2 months on, and he's 40 points.
It's the end of October, yeah, and it's all tightening up.
It's all coming up for Max, and the momentum is absolutely with him. He's won. He hasn't been beaten by a McLaren since Zandvoort, which is
from Zandvoort onwards, he has scored as many points as McLaren.
Yeah,
which is kind of insane.
And yeah, he's won on so many different circuits now. So obviously Monza, Baku, he outpaced them at Singapore when he probably shouldn't have done. And
outpaced is a bit strong. He outqualified him, but then Lando stuck to him like glue all day.
Yeah, but Lando could have overtaken him if he was better. Yeah, I just think the momentum is absolutely with him. And the McLarens don't look like winning, especially Piastri. I think Norris is still driving very well. But Piastri looks off it at the moment.
It's that thing, isn't it, for Lando at the moment? Do you focus on Oscar in front or do you focus on Max behind?
It's really hard.
I still want to back Oscar Piastri towards the end of this campaign. He's still got the most wins this year. Obviously, 7 wins to him, 5 for Norris and Verstappen at this stage. But it's that horrible balance, isn't it, of McLaren. I mean, McLaren have already confirmed they're not bringing any more upgrades this year.
Yeah.
Could a Mexico work for them? Could it be like a Brazil? I mean, I think, as I keep saying, I think Vegas is going to be championship defining how Vegas will pan out. Because if it's a track where, again, Mercedes are very good, that could either be a blessing or a curse for Verstappen. Obviously, if it works out like Singapore, it might not be the worst thing in the world. But otherwise, I mean, what I would actually really love to see is both McLaren and Max keep crashing into each other and George takes the championship
out of nowhere. I don't think that's going to happen.
That would be utterly insane.
That's soon to be not possible, isn't it?
Yeah. I believe since the year 2000, Jamie, there have been 6 different drivers that have been able to overhaul a world championship lead inside the final 7 races of the campaign. And all of them have either gone on to win a championship, are already world champions when they've done it. So it goes to show kind of how much that added psychology of already having a championship under your belt or being in or having been in that scenario before, how valuable that is.
You do just look at it and, like, these are the championship rounds. These are, you know, Max has been here before. Even if 23 and 22, they weren't that much pressure at the end of the season.
Even really 24.
Yeah, no, but, like, he still, I think he would say he felt the pressure after Brazil qualifying, certainly. But just the experience of having gone to the end of the season, it's a long campaign, and still delivering. And even in 21, Max was not driving well at the end of the year at all.
He was on the race just yesterday. I don't know if you watched their video about title wobbles.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeddah was absolutely horrific. They were talking about
like 10 examples of when drivers had huge wobbles. But obviously on all the other ones, they talked about kind of how they hung on to it. And they kind of skipped over that with Max's in 2021.
But I remember saying to you, I think after, I want to say Spain or maybe later on in, when it looked like Red Bull was nowhere.
I think after Spain and Austria, wasn't it? Obviously, he crashed into George in Spain. Obviously, got wiped out by Antonelli in Austria.
And I remember thinking, it looks like it's between the McLarens, but they're going to crash a lot come the end of the season when they've not got this far before. And there's going to be pressure and there's going to be... Because for all they know, this could be their only shot at a world championship for both of them.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, McLaren at this point... And I wonder if, you know, it's that horrible thing, isn't it? Because you could say to your drivers, look, if Max is still closing in, we'll get to the end of Vegas, and whoever is ahead, we're just going to have to put all the effort on making sure they win the championship. But on the other hand, does that then create even more desperation before Vegas about you've got to beat each other?
It's such a brutal
kind of spiral, isn't it? And obviously Max doesn't have any of those concerns.
Exactly, but he's just gonna there's go out a chance win. They're going to start intervening with the McLaren drivers at this point. They've done it all so
unless
fairly.
They keep crashing into each other. I mean, what have we seen? When was the last time a McLaren didn't either crash into each other or out of a race?
Singapore?
Monza? They crashed into each other.
Yeah, they didn't crash in Monza.
But even then, there was controversy. Basically, since the summer break, every weekend has been controversial for McLaren. Which is kind of staggering.
In some way, yeah.
Yeah, it's really... I mean,
who do you think is going to be world champion?
I still want to back Oscar Piastri, but I'm getting nervous.
I would probably say... If I had to put a bet on it, I would probably go Norris.
It's just Oscar needs one weekend where he comes back swinging now, doesn't
exactly.
he?
But the form he's in is absolutely horrific.
He's in a real rut right now. And up to this point, I would have backed Oscar to be able to get out of there. I would have said, Lando won't get out of this, but Oscar can. And I'm just getting a little bit nervous. I understand, obviously, USA again, a bit of circumstance didn't help. But obviously, Lando was... It was the first time all year, Jamie, where I've kind of felt that on all the circuits last year where Oscar was way behind Lando, every single other one prior to COTA, he fought back this year and either been right with him or quickie. Now, there were so many occasions early on in the year where we go, oh, Lando's never been out qualified at Spain, for example, and then Oscar wiped the floor with him. COTA was the first time it felt like this year where, without extraneous circumstances, Oscar was as far away from Lando as he was last year. And that's what's making me nervous.
It is two goes at Mexico before Piastri has finished P8 and P8. So
yeah,
keep that in mind.
Yeah, not reassuring. Obviously, Max has often loved this track. But again, Norris and Verstappen do tend to like the same kind of circuits, isn't it? I mean, does the altitude play into effect? Yeah, well, they didn't really, did they? They had a hilarious battle. It wasn't a great battle. Max forgot how to drive once again. But
well,
he was complaining about George Russell
fouling,
doing it to him. I hate that kind of term, a tactical foul. It's so slimy.
It was very clever. He prevented Norris
slimy.
From winning. He got the win to the Ferrari boys.
Yeah, I know, but it's still slimy, isn't it? Colin, what are the scores on the doors for predictions?
Oh, I'm not actually sure I updated it from last week. Oh, I did.
Yeah, I think you did.
I'm on 62.
Yep.
And you're on 48. So it's getting... I mean, there's
it's
a lot of
it's getting crunch
left.
Time for me. I need to do a
yeah, exactly.
Bring
you need
this
to really
fight back
turn
in.
It on.
Oh, do I back Max?
So you get to
Mexico?
Go first.
You know what? I'm going to do it. Max Verstappen pole. Max Verstappen win. Lando P2. Oscar third.
Wow.
Just because I like the fact now that you probably can't say Max to win.
I can't do that. Yeah, that's a bit annoying. Well, in that case, I'll say Lando Norris on pole.
Okay.
I'll say...
I'm kind of hoping I can reverse engineer this because I really... I'm not a Max Verstappen fan. I want to see Oscar Piastri win this title. So I'm hoping that if I finally back Max, it'll go wrong.
Well, I really want to say Verstappen's going to win, obviously. But I guess for the spirit of the game, I probably shouldn't.
No, you can't.
So I'll say Lando Norris will win.
Okay.
With Verstappen second.
Okay.
And... I always said Carlos Sainz, but he didn't drive for Ferrari anymore.
Hey, he got a podium a couple of weeks ago.
He actually has two podiums recently, doesn't he?
Yeah. There you go. Hamilton's had a podium this year. Get in, ladies and gents. He's won. Hey, hang on a minute. You counting the sprint, therefore I'm counting the sprint.
I will say Charles Leclerc again. Why not?
Fair enough. Fair enough. Ferrari
has six podiums now.
Leclerc's had six podiums this year.
Hamilton's had zero.
Hamilton's had zero in races. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of mad, but I'm having a look at this at the moment. First of all, George Russell has more podium non-wins than Max this year, which is quite impressive.
That is impressive, yeah.
It is that thing of, like, if Mercedes had delivered a little bit more earlier on in this campaign, could George have actually seriously been in the title fight with the way the McLarens are collapsing?
Yeah.
There were too many races where Mercedes were completely anomalous.
Well, he needs about 50 more points, doesn't he, George Russell?
But yeah, the fact that in the top 11, the only two drivers that don't have a podium are Albon and Hamilton is...
Yeah, I feel a bit for Albon, because
do you not feel a bit for Hamilton?
All season. Yeah. Not at all.
Fair enough. Sainz has absolutely frauded his way back into...
Oh, I know. He's
like, into a decent result this year. It's hilarious. But yeah, I mean, the fact that Bortoleto is going to finish arguably last of the full-time drivers with 18 points is insane.
Yeah, get good.
As well. Utterly insane. Have we got anything else to add, though, Jamie? I think we've ticked off everything we wanted to.
Yeah, I think we've done well.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I hope you have a good weekend, sir. I hope you enjoy the Grand Prix. I'm going to be doing Le Mans 24, so I'm going to be trying to watch it where I can. Thank you all, as always, so much for watching. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure to leave a like, get yourself subscribed, drop us a sub, drop us a follow, all that good stuff. Are we going to be back Monday, Jamie? Are you not going to be Snot Goblin 183 anymore?
I hope I'm better by then, but we'll see, won't we?
Wonderful. Give me an update. Luckily, we haven't got a race next weekend, so we'll be live at some point.